A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O,
P, Q, R, S, T. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of PQRST, Parody Quips, Rants, and Storytelling. And I started off this particular episode with my best Yoda impression because the Nitpicker's Guide to the Movies is going through Return of the Jedi on today's episode. And if you listened to the episode from 2 weeks ago, this has been the plan all along. I had no idea that when I recorded that one, that in 2 weeks' time we would have lost Carrie Fisher. And as you can imagine, that is my opening thought. We lost Carrie Fisher. And we've lost a lot of celebrities this year. Unfortunately, her own mother, Debbie Reynolds, died yesterday. And Carrie died 2 days ago. And there have been many, many more. Alan Rickman, David Bowie, Prince, George Michaels. And I have a George Michaels track or two. I have a Prince album. I have enjoyed Alan Rickman in a number of films. Never saw Singin' in the Rain, so I don't have much of a connection to Debbie Reynolds. But Carrie Fisher's death has been the most impactful, and I say impactful. I'm not a celebrity follower. And yes, she died 2 days ago. Thousands of people died 2 days ago. Thousands of people will die tomorrow. Thousands of people die and are born every day. But unlike the other celebrities on the list that I gave and the ones that I don't even remember because it's been so long that we've lost this year, Carrie Fisher had the biggest impact on my particular life because of Star Wars, as most people might assume. Enjoyed her work in When Harry Met Sally, which is probably my wife's favorite movie, and certainly one of the ones we both enjoy very much. And I watched her on the short-lived Green Project Greenlight reality show that I've mentioned on a previous podcast from ages ago. And you know, she did other things than just wear cinnamon buns on her ears or dressed in that slave costume, but as far as my childhood goes, what I knew Carrie Fisher for was being Princess Leia. And, well, lots of things are being said. I don't know that I can improve on any of them. Suffice to say, in my opinion, she was the best Disney princess ever, by far. And I hope she knew what was waiting and is in a better place. Anyway, may the Force be with you, Carrie. And I will offer up just respect for life and for death, a moment of silence here in this podcast, and then we'll move on. And life does move on, and let's do so. I'm not even going to say I think that's what Carrie would want. Wherever she is now, she doesn't care about this podcast. She never did, and that's okay. So we'll move on as life does. I got to see Rogue One before recording this podcast. That would have been Monday night. It's currently Thursday. And when I first saw that there was going to be a Star Wars set around the time of the classics movie coming out, I was like, this is completely unnecessary. And then I saw the trailer, and I was like, okay, I still think it's unnecessary, but I'm kind of on board. And I still maintain it wasn't necessary, but it was fantastic. I very much enjoyed myself, and I will endeavor not to spoil anything, because it's a relatively new movie, so probably some of my listeners have not seen it. I will say that you could go from the end of Rogue One right into A New Hope, and you might notice that the production values drop slightly, but otherwise, it's fairly seamless. There were a couple cameos from other Star Wars characters and so forth, but it was just fun. The starfighter battles, the space and also on surface battles, really felt like dogfighting. It felt like the old stuff, in a way that the prequel movies, George Lucas... I would love to make George Lucas sit down and watch Rogue One and just say, look, see, this is how it's supposed to be done. You see how we care about the characters? You see how there's a plot? You see how things feel real? Your prequel movies sucked, but I would have to get in line, because I think there's a few million of us who would like to do that. Suffice to say that that Rogue One was an order of magnitude better than all of the three prequel movies combined. You take the best of Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and whatever the third one was, put them together, and it wouldn't be a tenth of what Rogue One was. And it also scratched an itch I didn't realize I had, that being to see more X-Wings and AT-AT Walkers and just classic Star Wars stuff. In a way, The Force Awakens didn't. I mean, yeah, there were starfighters and that, and Millennium Falcon, which did not make an appearance for a frame that I could see in Rogue One, but it was not the same. You know, it's like, okay, this is the classic stuff, but here we're taking it further, and I'm about to do a spoiler for The Force Awakens. It's been out for over a year, so if you haven't seen it, deal with it. But in The Force Awakens, it's like, hey, there's this brand new Death Star, and it's even more important than, oh, it's already destroyed. Okay. In a way, that reminded me of The Phantom Menace, in which there was like, oh, hey, there's this bad Mamma Jamma Sith guy with the red and black face and the horns. And, oh, he's already cut in half. Okay. That just set up this amazing, awesome thing. And, oh, it's already destroyed? Oh. Well, okay. Rogue One was not like that. There were, you know, the usual MacGuffins and things being destroyed, but on top of that, they had a hard job, because you know the Death Star that you're seeing being constructed is not going to be destroyed in this movie. You know what movie it's going to be destroyed in. So, you know, knowing how things are going to turn out, obviously there's no true peril for the Darth Vader character who shows up briefly, or for the Princess Leia character who shows up very briefly, because you know they make it into the next movie. But it's still very well crafted. It was a great script, and I really, really enjoyed myself. Highly recommend going to see Rogue One. The only sour note was that they digitally recreated Moff Tarkin, and he had a couple minutes worth of screen time, and digitally recreated Princess Leia for about 3 seconds. And you can tell it's a CG human, and that just never looks good. And they didn't have to actually show us Princess Leia. She only has one word, one line, near the end, and it could have been in reflection. It didn't have to be a straight-on shot. Same with Moff Tarkin. I guess seeing him was necessary at some points, but it could have been a little more shadowed, over-the-shoulder sorts of things, just to stay away from the CG effects. And I don't know for certain, but it wouldn't surprise me if the powers that be that made this film actually used a lot of practical models, much like the classic Star Wars, because that's how it felt. It did not feel shiny, everything's made in the computers, aren't they wonderful, prequel-ish, which is good, because that was terrible. So, go see Rogue One. Moving on, even further, this particular podcast is supposed to be about nitpicking Return of the Jedi. And it was one of the top 50 grossing movies of all times. It was number 46 when I got there. And I don't know what I did. It may have replaced something else that I didn't really want to watch. If it did, I didn't write down what it was. But there were a couple, like Indiana Jones 4 was one of the top 50 grossing movies in 2010. It might still be on that list, but there was no way I was going to watch that piece of garbage again. So instead, I nitpicked Raiders of the Lost Ark when it came to that particular episode. So I don't know if this was instead of something. I do believe that the prequel movies, all three of them, are actually on this list, and we will get to them. Whether or not we'll see Empire or A New Hope, I'm not sure. But Return of the Jedi was a big part of my childhood. I don't know that I saw any of the movies originally in theaters. Of course, Star Wars came out the year before I was born, and Empire was out before I was... probably even Jedi was out before I was old enough to really go to movies, which my family didn't do a lot anyway. But I was aware of Star Wars. I had the novelization books. I can remember reading the novel of Star Wars when I was 6, and people at our church telling me, well, not me, telling my mother that it was horrible that I was reading it, because of course the Force was directly inspired by Satan, and I was going straight to hell. And I don't know, this near 30 years later hasn't happened yet, but actually, if I read it when I was 6, then it's, well, over 30 years later and hadn't happened yet. But read the novelizations as a kid. Friends had various models. I had a couple figurines. I had Return of the Jedi sheets, I remember. And If I was still single, I might be looking into getting Return of the Jedi sheets, but I'm not. So instead, I'll do a podcast about nitpicking Return of the Jedi. And before I get into the nitpicks themselves, it's a fun little bit of trivia. There are other nitpickers out there. In fact, if you've been really listening to all these podcasts, you know that I started the nitpicking series after being inspired by Phil Ferrand, who wrote a bunch of Star Trek nitpickery. And in addition to having several Star Trek nitpicking books, I also have a book nitpicking Star Wars. It's written by T.A. Chafin and Pauly Latrulle. I believe that's how you pronounce their names. They're probably never going to hear this, but hopefully I got their names pronounced right. Just the same, they wrote The Unauthorized Nitpicker's Guide to the Star Wars Saga. Reportedly, these are their words, they've seen the Star Wars movies over 800 times. I'll say that again. According to them, they have, even if it's combined, they have seen the Star Wars movies more than 800 times. Frankly, they need to get out more. But as I went into this review, I kept that book handy, curious to see if I could possibly find anything that they did not, because they've seen the movies over 800 times. Another fun thing about Pauly Latrulle and T.A. Chafin, a story that actually impacts my own life, I will tell when we get to the Star Wars nitpickery. But yeah, it was just a curious thing for me. Will I be able to find anything they didn't? They've seen these movies 800 times. I'm sure I won't. And yet, I found 35 separate continuity or production errors that did not make their Star Wars nitpicking book. Not even plot holes, like how the robots walk all the way to Jabba's palace, even though R2-D2 supposedly has to roll everywhere unless he uses those fancy jets in his legs, thank you, George Lucas prequel movies, and the C-3PO can only take about a 6-inch step. It's really lucky that they were able to walk all the way to the palace. Setting aside things like that, 35 separate continuity production errors that did not make their book, even though they've seen these movies 800 times. Sometimes it's just fun to be a nitpicker. So, 2 minutes into the movie, the camera tilts down and we see the under-construction Death Star. I guess this isn't really a nit, but as I look at the infamous sphere, the construction process seems a little haphazard. And we got tired of working on the upper part, so we started on the lower, and, well, then there was this union strike. Anyway, 2 minutes, 33 seconds into the movie, I found a nit. 800 times they've seen these films that they did not. As the shuttle approaches the Death Star, we watch the shuttle crew piloting. Between one shot and the next, at 2 minutes and 33 seconds, the two crew members' hands switch positions. And that's boring to hear on a podcast, and I don't share a lot of those, but I found it, and they didn't. 3 minutes, 15 seconds. Inform the commander that Lord Vader's shuttle has arrived. Lord Vader's shuttle is there, and you're just now telling the commander the shuttle has arrived? This is a guy that force-chokes people if they don't make his coffee correctly. If it were me, I would want to be in the shuttle bay where he was coming, like, an hour before his scheduled arrival. That's all I'm saying. It's funny how pencil pushers are the same in any galaxy, isn't it? 4 minutes, 7 seconds. The commander assures Lord Vader that his men are working as fast as they can. But then, just after finding out the Emperor is coming, he says, "We will double our efforts." Okay, if they're working as fast as they can, you can't double your efforts. It's not possible. But obviously, bureaucrats just say whatever they think people want to hear in any galaxy. "This station will be operational as planned." Really? Because a moment later you say, "The Emperor asks the impossible." Anyway. 5 minutes and 4 seconds. I already talked about this, that the robots are walking all the way to Jabba's palace, which hopefully we have a long time for them to do that. I mean, I suppose the Rebellion's on a shoestring and nobody could rent a land speeder. 6 minutes, 52 seconds. R2 runs into a Gamorrean guard and backs off in surprise. I know his photoreceptor is off to one side, but does he see like a person does? He can't tell that the guy is there. And by the way, it's my understanding that droid is short for android, meaning manlike. In C-3PO's case, sure, but I have never seen a human that was 2 feet tall and had basically one leg coming out the middle of him and then two others where his arms turned into legs. You see where I'm going with this. 8 minutes in. Odd instructions are to give the present only to Jabba himself. This is the justification for the insistence that R2 is being all stubborn. that they have been instructed to only give the present to Jabba. Jabba is a gangster. If Tatooine had streets, Jabba would be street smart. R2 could be packed full of whatever kind of explosive they use in Far, Far Away, or nerve gas or something, but the droids are just ushered right into the throne room. Jabba needs better help, is what I'm saying. So the droids are taken to the dungeon in 10 minutes 51 seconds into the movie. On the way, 3PO is accosted by a tentacle. The Gamorrean guard slaps at it. It's kind of strange that the tentacle's owner barks in pain and flinches because the Gamorrean guard doesn't come even close to actually hitting the thing. I love how they make they want so much for robots to be, for us to have compassion for robots. It happened in the Terminator movies. It happens any movie that has an android or robot probably comes up with this nit. 11 minutes, 11 seconds. You see a classic shot. Droid is being turned upside down, and hot brands are being applied to his feet. They're torturing robots. And it screams. Why did the designers of this metal object give it the ability to feel pain? Why is it screaming? It's a robot. And they also made steam come out of the robot's feet just in case it was ever tortured like this. It just seems like a waste of software design. 12 minutes, 16 seconds. The hologram Luke presents the droids as a gift to Jabba. Does Luke really have a plan, or is the Force just kind of helping him get all lucky? Because it seems really random that R2 is made a waiter on the sail barge. And if he's not, then Luke's whole plan fails because he has to have his lightsaber, which is secreted in R2. It's also lucky that nobody decided to scan R2 for evidence of lightsabers. 13 minutes and 5 seconds. The special edition DVDs of Star Wars. I would give so much for a DVD or Blu-ray of the classic films without all the fancy new crapola that they put in, which kind of ruins things. For example, here, this, you know, the song in Jabba's Palace that used to be like 10 seconds long and now it's like 2 minutes long? Yeah, the magic of digital technology. George Lucas was able to take a slightly annoying song and make it remarkably annoying. Did we need the Hutt Palace Lounge Act? And what are the odds that a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, an evening's entertainment would look almost exactly like what we experience here on Earth? The lead singer has lipstick, the backup singers are wearing tight clothing. Yeah. 14 minutes, 30 seconds. Bad guy in a black astronaut helmet rushes up Jabba's stairs to stop the bounty hunter. He takes one push to the chest and just collapses. Guy's a total wuss. 14 minutes, 42 seconds. Not a nit necessarily, but man, Huddies is a very versatile language. The bounty hunter says, Yate, Yate, Yoto. According to the subtitles, that's, I have come for the bounty on this Wookiee. A minute later, the bounty hunter, I guess it's not Huddies, it's whatever language Boosh speaks. A minute later, Yoto, Yoto, means I want 50,000, no less. There are very few words in this language to do a lot of stuff. 15 minutes, 30 seconds. 3PO is translating this exchange between the bounty hunter and Jabba. In Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, there's such a thing as a Babel fish. You put it in your ear, and it translates everything directly. Well, 3PO is not supposed to just be translating directly. He says it himself, like ad nauseum. He's a protocol droid, fluent in over 6 million forms of communication. Protocol. That means he should have some sense of diplomacy in what he does. But all he does is say, 50,000, no less, without trying in any way to soften the blow or be tactful about how he's talking to Jabba. I'm just saying he's not very good at his job. 15 minutes, 58 seconds. Boba Fett loves his accessories. And here's an actual continuity error you can look for. And I'm pretty sure that the 800 times people caught this one. At 15 minutes, 58 seconds, the antenna on Fett's helmet is on the left side. 20 seconds ago, when he was flirting with a couple of the hotties at Jabba's Palace, the antenna was on the right side. And at 21 minutes, it goes back to being on the right side. The guy just cannot make up his mind. This is also one I just love. And every time, since the first time that I saw the movie, this has made me laugh. 19 minutes, 14 seconds in, the bounty hunter has lowered the carbonite slab and does the process to unfreeze Han. Han unfreezes and falls forward on his face. Well, if you've seen the movie more than once, you know that the bounty hunter is Leia. Seems kind of callous of her to just let him fall right the heck down like that. She doesn't even try to catch him. 21 minutes, 30 seconds, Han has been recaptured and thrown in a cell with Chewbacca. Because I guess they don't try to break out, but does that make any sense at all, throwing a guy into a cell with his best friend? Especially when they're, you know, nerf-herding smugglers. 22 minutes, 38 seconds. Rather than using Obi-Wan's trick of tugging at the minds of the Gamorrean guards so that they'll let him pass, Luke Skywalker uses his dad's force choke trick. Someone's running awful close to the dark side. 24:45. Jabba tells Luke in Hutties that there will be no deal and he'll enjoy watching Skywalker die. 3PO doesn't translate a word. A, does Luke understand Hutties? Yeah, he grew up on Tatooine, but I grew up on Earth and there's plenty of languages I don't understand, like most of them. Secondly, who told 3PO to stop translating? We move on at 25 minutes and 50 seconds. Luke has been dropped into the Rancor pit, and the Rancor at this point picks up the Gamorrean in his left hand. Suddenly the shot changes. A frame later, he's in the Rancor's right hand. Just doing a little juggling before dinner. This one was interesting, especially because the nitpickers, Luttrell and Chapin, caught this one, but they made a mistake in their book and mislabeled left and right. So I'm nitpicking nitpickers. And I should be careful because I don't want the universe to implode. 27 minutes in, Luke doesn't smack the Rancor all that hard with the rock, but the thing still rears back in pain. You've heard of having a glass jaw. Rancors apparently have glass fingers. And 27 minutes and 40 seconds. I was always cool with this as a kid, but Luke has all these amazing force powers, and he escapes the Rancor by throwing a skull at a button. It's not that he can't, but it's kind of a letdown. 28 minutes and 56 seconds. Thankfully, like in any action movie ever, rather than just shooting or slicing or whatevering our good guys, Jabba decides to throw them into the Sarlacc pit, giving them a whole bunch of time to escape. Again, it's lucky because, you know, R2 has Luke's lightsaber, but R2's not there. Anyway. Oh, the special edition. 31 minutes and 23 seconds. What was wrong with the old Sarlacc? Why do we have to have this new Flower of Death thing? George Lucas. 32 minutes, 40 seconds. This one is famous. Been talked about by a lot of people. As Luke is pushed off the platform, he turns. He's falling into the Sarlacc pit. As he falls in the first shot, he's grabbing the plank with one hand. A frame later, the shot changes, and he's holding on with both hands. 32 minutes, 57 seconds. As Luke is running around he's got his lightsaber back, and he's running around on the skiff. He hits several people with the lightsaber. Can you set it to stun? Because this, I thought, was a sword that would slice through things, but he's just knocking people around with the blade. And he runs over to release Chewbacca. The saber's still blazing. He ought to be a little more careful. 35 minutes, 16 seconds. The Sarlacc has reached up to grab Lando. From one frame to the next, the tentacle is just touching Lando's boot, and then it's suddenly wrapped around him to the waist. The thing can move when it wants to. Everyone has been saved, and they set off to different planets, and we switch back to the Death Star, and the Emperor makes his way down the shuttle ramp. The hissing jets of steam on the ramp at 38 minutes and 24 seconds, do they have any function other than to just make his entrance more dramatic? You know? 39 minutes, 25 seconds. The Emperor is walking through the hangar bay, and the close-up shot has these gray-suited Imperials standing in formation. The second we cut to the wide shot, only white stormtroopers are there. And yes, my fellow Star Wars nerds did catch that one. 45 minutes, 54 seconds. Luke is on Dagobah. He's talking to Obi-Wan Kenobi. As far as I understand, Obi-Wan Kenobi is dead, and the image we see is the far, far away version of a ghost. Why does he make the vines move when he walks past? Don't you need to be corporeal to do that? 50 minutes, 13 seconds. Say what you will about the Empire. They make some dumb decisions. It really is convenient for the Rebels that the generator creating the Death Star shield is not located on the Death Star. If you're going to, you know, Star Trek, they've figured this out. If you're going to have shields, put the shield generator inside the shield. And it's even stupider now that we know, based on Rogue One, that the whole 2 meter wide trench on the original Death Star that led to the reactor explosion was actually something a saboteur created and not just a really stupid design flaw that nobody noticed. It was something that somebody did to sabotage it that nobody noticed. 51 minutes and 15 seconds. Han Solo is going to lead a command crew to Endor to destroy the shield generator. Chewie volunteers, of course, and we expect him to. But then Leia says, count me in. I understand why she would, because she loves him and she's, you know, an adrenaline junkie. I'm amazed that nobody objects, though. This is an Alderaanian princess. She's one of the few remaining members of the Alderaanian race. She's incredibly important to the rebellion. How does she just get to go on this mission? I mean, aren't there some red-shirted Star Trek ensigns wandering around we could send instead? And then Luke Skywalker, last of the incredibly important Jedi race, also volunteers, and everybody's fine with that as well. Maybe he threatened to force choke them if they didn't let him go. I don't know. Moving on, they take the shuttle Tiderium, because I've seen these movies quite a few times myself. The shuttle Tiderium is headed towards the Endor moon, parts and supplies, and Solo tells Chewie to fly casual, and then they are using an old code, but I was just about to clear them. The Imperials should so have realized that it was a ruse, because since when has anybody in command of anything in the Empire not spoken with a British accent or been a Sith Lord? I mean, come on. Han Solo does not speak in a British accent. They should have known, is what I'm saying. 56 minutes, 34 seconds. This is one worth actually looking up. I was amazed that the Star Wars nerds didn't catch this. I don't think it's just my DVD copy. The shuttle tilts down towards the planet. We look past our heroes through the front windscreen, and the curve of the planet runs right through Harrison Ford's head. Like, his head is partially transparent. It's some sort of glitch in the computer-generated effect. I'm betting it's from the original, so I'm doubly amazed that the nerds didn't pick it up and that they didn't fix it when they made this special Everything is Wonderful edition. Again, 56 minutes, 34 seconds. Worth seeing. 57 minutes and 8 seconds. The shuttle has landed. The rebels are disembarking and traipsing through the forest. And just for fun, they bring along one droid that can only take mincing steps and another that needs flat surfaces to travel on unless he engages his special jets. Why are the droids here? For one thing, maybe it's just the sense of fair play, because all the rebels are dressed in camouflage, and the droids are really, really bright and shiny. 57:45. I guess Luke really hasn't completed his training. As he's crouching on the hillside above stormtroopers that need to be dealt with, seems like he could use some sort of Jedi mind trick to make them rush off. I could see him not wanting to use force choke if he decided that that's leading him towards the dark side, but it's just surprising that the team has to rely on General Solo and his big, hairy, walking carpet friend. You know, the masters of subtlety. 58 minutes, 50 seconds. The speeder bike sequence. I love the speeder bike sequence. I love the whole movie. I love all three of these movies. That's one of the reasons why I'm still so mad about the prequels, because they tarnished something wonderful. So I'm not going to make a big deal about how the speeder chase sequence, it's obviously green screened. Of course it is, but it was so amazing what they pulled off using the technology of the time. That's for all three of these movies. It's amazing what they pulled off using the technology of the time. So I don't care that it's green screened. And I will take the speeder bike chase sequence. It's an order of magnitude better over the frickin' pod race. Yes, in fact, that's an excellent way to visualize what I'm talking about with the classic movies are fantastic and the prequel movies suck. Watch the speeder chase sequence and then watch the pod racing sequence. You see how you care about one and you don't care about the other? But I said I was going to be nice to the green screen sequence. The speeder bikes, for the record, apparently don't cast shadows. 59 minutes, 29 seconds. Does it make a lot of sense that both Luke and Leia are fantastic speeder bike riders? I'm just saying, that Alliance training, they cover everything. 59 minutes, 48 seconds. Keep on that one. I'll take these two. Luke flips on the brakes, and he throws himself forward a second before the bike shoots backwards. Jumped the gun just a bit, Mark Hamill did. 1 hour and 20 seconds. This isn't necessarily a nit. Maybe this particular stormtrooper is like Evel Knievel in the Empire's world, but Leia flies up into the trees, and the trooper looks back trying to find her. The back-facing shot turns, And then we see the guy again. He's still looking backwards. So while this dude is zipping through the tightly packed forest at 100 miles an hour, turned while he was looking backwards. I'm just saying, that's incredible. 1 hour, 1 minute into the movie, Luke is fighting a stormtrooper, both of them on speeders. They bang together twice. Neither is pushing the other or flipping switches on the other's bike or doing anything. They're just bumping together. I'm sorry, in this situation, I would be fighting as dirty as I could. And it's also interesting that Luke has a lightsaber on his belt that he does not choose to use in this situation, where he finally has to jump off his speeder bike and let the other guy crash into a log. Leia has crashed. 1 hour, 5 minutes, 8 seconds into the movie. Okay, I was saying good things about the Alliance training, but they obviously didn't cover in their training. A blaster bolt out of nowhere sends Leia and Wicket scrambling for cover behind the log. Leia pulls out her blaster, and she sticks her head way over the log to try and see where the shot came from. She doesn't use cover and to try to peer through or around. No, she just sticks her head way up and makes it a target. Fortunately, the Imperial is a terrible shot because he shoots her at her and somehow misses the incredibly beautiful target she's presenting. 1 hour, 5 minutes, 25 seconds. Freeze! Come on, get up. Well, which is it? Make up your mind. And how did you sneak up on me that silently, you white plastic armor-wearing ninja? 1 hour, 6 minutes, 14 seconds. So Leia is separated from the group on this super serious mission to destroy the Death Star. Wicket takes her hand and leads her in another direction. Now, maybe he's leading her back to the shield generator. She doesn't know. But she's like, hey, you know what? I'll go with you. Forget what I needed to do. Let the guys wander the forest looking for me. I want Ewok treats. Okay, she doesn't say that, but it's kind of implied. Just in passing, I Want Ewok Treats would be a good name for a band. 1 hour, 7 minutes, 50 seconds. Apparently the Force is with Luke. Leia and her speeder bike chase were just going crazy through the forest. They were not leaving a trail that I could see because they're in midair. And yet here we see Luke, who would have no idea where Leia was, picking up her camouflaged helmet. One camouflaged piece of equipment out of the entire forest. 1 hour, 8 minutes, 49 seconds. Chewie is sniffing in a dead animal on a stick. Okay, I could see him thinking with his stomach, but come on, these guys are supposed to be smart. This has trap written all over it. 1 hour, 10 minutes, 28 seconds. Oh, my head. 3PO is complaining about a headache. 3PO, the robot, is complaining about a headache. He has a very prissy operating system, this droid. 1 hour, 13 minutes, 55 seconds. The Ewoks have made 3PO into a god, he said, putting quotes around the word. But they don't seem to think he's a very important god, because in the middle of their worship, Leia tells 3PO to tell them to set the captives free. And 3PO does so, and they don't translate what he says into English, but I do know that the Ewoks pay no attention to him. 1 hour, 14 minutes, 14 seconds. Early in the forest. Earlier in the forest, 3PO says, and I quote, "It's against my programming to impersonate a deity." All right, at this point, 1 hour, 14 minutes, 14 seconds, Luke tells 3PO to threaten the Ewoks with magic. The droid splutters for a while, but eventually complies. Was he lying in the forest? If it's against his programming, then it's impossible. Not just something he would rather not do. It's a computer. You can't choose to ignore its own programming, can it? Well, I hope it can't, because I have a lot of computers in this house, and if they decided to take over... let's see. God gets this one a lot. 1 hour, 14 minutes, 26 seconds. People demand a sign to prove that God exists. 3PO just threatened, against his programming, to rain down destruction on the Ewoks. So they stop for a moment, and then they keep going. They may worship him, but they obviously don't really believe him. 1 hour, 14 minutes, 39 seconds. Luke, finally, to make 3PO seem godlike, lifts him off the ground and spins him around. This is an observation, not really a nit. This is the first time we've seen him use the Force since that Gamorrean guard choke way back in Jabba's palace. Does he need to store up the power of the Force or something? I thought he was a Jedi Master. And he's a Jedi. I want to see him use the Force already. Continuity error at picking time, 1 hour, 15 minutes, 10 seconds. R2 is tied up, just like the boys. He decided not to use that fancy cutting saw he has, but anyway. At 1:14:23, we saw that he had been freed. At 1:15:04, we see him again, ropeless. Here at 1:15:10, somebody comes up to cut the ropes off him. I've never thought about this until I was nitpicking, but if you think about it, 1:16:24, 3PO is telling the enchanted Ewoks the story of their adventures. Apparently. I don't understand Ewok, but he's doing a great job of it in that he can replicate sound effects. So we hear starfighters, we hear Imperial walkers, we hear the explosion of the Death Star. I'm submitting he sucks as a storyteller. So there were lightsabers, and then there were big scout walkers, and then the Death Star blew up. 1 hour, 20 minutes, 30 seconds, Leia discovers she's Luke's sister. I know. Somehow, I've always known. Really? Even when you were making out back on Hoth? 1 hour, 23 minutes, 50 seconds. Luke has gone off to be captured. He is with Vader. And as they walk side by side, Vader is a lot taller than Luke, which, before there were prequel movies, didn't bother me, because Vader had always just been about 7 feet tall. When they turned whiny Hayden Christensen Anakin Skywalker into Vader, did they add 8 inches of height while they were putting him back together?
No!
Anyway, 1 hour, 26 minutes, 7 seconds. The Rebels approach the shield generator, and everyone's camouflaged except good old Han Solo. I don't know why. 1 hour, 27 minutes, 37 seconds. The Rebels, the Alliance, are preparing to take a stand against the Death Star, and Ackbar says, "All craft, prepare to jump into hyperspace on my mark." Shot cuts to the Falcon, and without waiting for instructions, Lando pulls the hyperspace switch. This is a delicate military operation. Why don't you wait to be signaled, cowboy? 1 hour, 27 minutes, 39 seconds. Lando tells the command ship that all fighters were accounted for, and I count 14 fighters behind him. As the Falcon leads the charge into hyperspace, suddenly there's 20 fighters behind him. Where were those other four? And don't think that's the last of that bit. 1 hour, 28 minutes, 48 seconds. Back to Endor, and one of the Ewoks jumps on a speeder bike. Now, this thing has like 20 switches. I don't see any labels. Is it a little far-fetched that the Ewok can just, start up a speeder bike? Is it also a little far-fetched that three of the four stormtroopers guarding the entrance run after him? Are speeder bikes that important that if one is taken by an Ewok, it's worth abandoning the shield generator to go after? But then again, maybe that was all part of the plan because the Empire's pulling a bait and switch. 1 hour, 34 minutes, 13 seconds. The Rebel fleet comes out of hyperspace, which is a fantastic effect, and suddenly the fighters behind the Millennium Falcon are back to 14. What happened to the other four? Also, 14 fighters? This is the last stand of the Rebellion against the Empire. We only have 14 fighters left? 1 hour, 34 minutes, 50 seconds. When Lando says, "All craft, pull up," the shot cuts wide, and now there's 20 ships again. Maybe these four fighters just have a cloaking device that they're practicing using. 1 hour, 36 minutes, 51 seconds. Well, if the Rebels are going to, give the Empire a break and bring along two very visible droids on their camouflage mission, it's nice of the Empire to have tall, high center of gravity, easily tippable, wobbly scout walkers down here in the forest. I don't like nitpicking the scout walkers because they're so cool. A slight bunny trail. I think it's Big Bang Theory. Somewhere there's a thing about how if you saw Return of the Jedi before you turned 12, the Ewoks are very likely something you enjoy. You are fond of the Ewoks because of the nostalgia factor. And if you saw Return of the Jedi after you turned 12, you think the Ewoks are stupid because you were too old to find them amusing. And I saw Return of the Jedi well before I was 12. I have always liked Ewoks. I always will like Ewoks. But it is just, an interesting thing to consider. Meanwhile, at 1 hour, 37 minutes, 36 seconds, I might have even identified with Ewoks, because when I first saw this movie, I was roughly the same size. And I still like them, but I will say that a dozen of them with their little spears and arrows taking down the Emperor's best troops does now seem ever so slightly ridiculous. 1 hour, 39 minutes, 35 seconds. If these are the Emperor's best troops, the Emperor has problems, because these troops can't hit squat. Leia and Han are crouched in the entrance of the shield generator while he's fiddling for like a minute, for over a minute, and one and only one shot gets through, and that only hits Leia in the shoulder. 1 hour, 40 minutes, 27 seconds. Not necessarily a nit, but back in space at this point, we cut to a shot of Green Leader, and he looks like he just came off a kabuki play. What is the guy's deal with all the stage makeup? Yeah, not necessarily a nit. Maybe he was doing a kabuki play when the call came down to jump in the Starfighter. I'm just saying, it's weird. 1 hour, 41 minutes, 18 seconds. The Star Destroyers, and there's a bunch of them, they hold back, not engaging in the battle. Lando wonders why, and we cut to a Star Destroyer's bridge. There's a special surprise waiting for the Rebels. The Death Star's cannon is operational, and the Destroyers just need to keep the Rebels from escaping. Okay, this is space. It happens in Star Trek movies. It happens in Star Wars movies. It might have even happened in Firefly. This is space. Space is three-dimensional. If all the Destroyers are hanging on, you know, one quadrant of space to keep the Rebels from escaping, the Rebels are free to go any of the quadrants they're not actually covering. Just have to turn in the other direction. That's all I'm saying. 1 hour, 41 minutes, 49 seconds. Trivia quiz. What's the worst job in the entire Empire? The one that they give to guys who refuse to quit boot camp but are absolutely useless? This one. The one where you stand inside the tunnel where the main cannon beam is fired. And there are guys in that tunnel in Rogue One, just like there were in A New Hope. What are these two doing besides absorbing a ton of radiation? 1 hour, 41 minutes, 52 seconds. The Empire just has a complete lack of military knowledge. They have a super weapon, and the Rebels think it's not operational yet. But it is. So what they have is known in military circles as the element of surprise. You only have the element of surprise once. But instead of choosing the most important target available, i.e. the Rebel command ship, they destroy one of the lesser frigates. If you have the element of surprise, you use it to attack the most important target you can. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. 1 hour, 41 minutes, 59 seconds. Production error. The alien, I'm going to call him Nien Num. It's N-I-E-N-N-U-M-B. He's sitting next to Lando Calrissian. He's in the Chewie's usual spot. He has really big black eyes that do an excellent job of reflecting the lights in the studio where they're filming Return of the Jedi. 1 hour, 43 minutes, 50 seconds, the Death Star cannon fires again, and again doesn't destroy the Rebel command ship. 1 hour, 45 minutes, 28 seconds, Chewie and a couple Ewoks are stalking a scout walker. Chewbacca's bandolier is on his left shoulder. 5 seconds later, it's on his right shoulder. He's got enough time to switch it, but why would he do that? And then at 1:45:43... Chewie swings on a vine as he swings onto the scout walkers, and despite the fact that this is a long time ago and far, far away, he does a Tarzan yell while he's doing so. Oh, and he bothered putting his bandolier back on his left shoulder also. 1:46:08. I thought it was amazing the Ewoks could operate speeder bikes. I find it absolutely astonishing that they can operate scout walkers. And you'd think the scout walkers might have foot controls, but they obviously don't, because there's no way an Ewok could operate hand controls and reach foot controls on a human-sized device. Why did the Empire even put the scout walkers down here? 1:47:41. It falls over and immediately explodes. Why would you use them in a forest? 1 hour, 48 minutes, 30 seconds. Han calls to Chewbacca, sitting on top of the scout walker. Get down here! She's wounded! Well, yes, she is. What is Chewie supposed to do about it? That's Wookiee for, I'm not a doctor. 1 hour, 53 minutes. I have some martial arts training, and I've read a lot about martial arts, and I feel safe in saying this. You never, ever, ever, ever fight angry. If you really want to get the best of somebody in some sort of martial arts encounter, get them angry, because then they lose. when, and here's an excellent example, because Luke goes all ape poopy on Vader, and he leaves himself wide open a dozen times. If Vader had chosen, he could have used any of those moments to slice the twin in twain. 1 hour, 53 minutes, 10 seconds. As the shot changes, Vader and Luke suddenly switch positions, which is lucky for Vader, as Luke was coming down with a killing blow before the shot change. Let's see. 1 hour, 56 minutes, 43 seconds. This is another famous one, and I think even the first time I saw the film, this bothered me. The Emperor is putting the Force Lightning whammy on Luke, and Luke is like, and we see a skeleton, all that cool stuff. While this is happening, we see a number of close-ups of Vader's helmet wrestling with his feelings. It's hard to tell that he's wrestling with his feelings because all we're seeing is the helmet, but we do see that helmet a lot. Well, every one of those, like, dozen close-up shots, the helmet is covered in dust. It's filthy. And right at the point where I'm like, would somebody wipe that off? The shot changes, we go back to Vader, and the helmet is all shiny and clean. From 1 hour, 55 minutes, 40 seconds, through 1:56:41, it's filthy, and then we cut back at 1:56:43, and somebody came in and wiped that stuff off. So, thank you, production assistant, for taking care of that. 1 hour, 57 minutes, 7 seconds. In my Fellowship of the Ring review, there was apparently no OSHA, Occupational Safety Hazard Administration, in Middle-Earth. There's also no OSHA long ago and far, far away. Vader throws the Emperor over a thin, waist-high railing, and he falls hundreds of feet down an open shaft. I mean, I guess it's nice that they have a token railing, but sure is easy to fall down there. 1 hour, 57 minutes, 51 seconds. Does it make any sense for the Falcon to fly ahead of three other fighters into the Death Star's innards? I mean, there's places where the ship can barely fit, and if it gets stuck, you know, why is the Falcon even in here? Of course I know why it's in here. It's the hero ship. It has to be in there. But they don't know how tight the tunnel's going to get, so why is this ship even in here? All right, 1 hour, 58 minutes, 30 seconds. So the Death Star needs to be destroyed from deep inside. The ships have gone in. Into the Death Star go six Rebel ships, two A-wings, two X-wings, one Y-wing, and a YT-1300 light freighter known as the Millennium Falcon that has no business being there. They're followed by six TIE fighters. One X-wing bites it, one TIE fighter bites it, then the Rebels split off. One A-wing and the Y-wing peel off to try to go back to the surface and draw off some of the Imperials. They're followed by three of the remaining TIE fighters. Let's go to the flowchart for this. So anyway, we should have one X-Wing, one A-Wing, and the YT-1300 light freighter known as the Millennium Falcon being pursued by two TIE fighters, except here at 1:58:30, there's only the X-Wing and the Falcon. Where the hell did the A-Wing go? 1 hour, 58 minutes, 37 seconds. The sensor dish gets knocked off the Falcon, and Lando says, "That was too close." For some reason, that line is really echoey, like he was in a concert hall when he recorded it, and I'm surprised they didn't fix it on the special edition. Oh, the Star Destroyer frailty. You know, in Rogue One, we see Star Destroyers being easily destroyed. In Empire, we see Star Destroyers being easily destroyed. Surely by now, someone has figured out, put the shield generator inside the shield. But no, 1:58:55, the forward deflector shield on the Super Star Destroyer is still in the huge water tower-like device that's like, hey, by the way, if you destroy this, we're defenseless. 1 hour, 59 minutes, 40 seconds. The suddenly defenseless Death Star, and it's awful nice that while they were designing the Death Star, they allowed enough room for ships to get in and destroy the one thing that would destroy the Death Star. The suddenly defenseless Death Star is about to explode. Somehow Luke managed to find an entire shuttle nobody's using, and it's unlocked. And I have this visual of him, you know, jumping into the pilot seat, reaching up to the visor, pulling it down, and having the keys fall in his hand. Like every movie ever. 1 hour, 59 minutes, 55 seconds. Luke, help me take this mask off. But you'll die. How does he know? And who told him how to get Darth Vader mask off? I mean, is there a diagram somewhere that I didn't see? Did he Google it? Pull here, twist that, mind the cup holder. Okay, I jumped the gun. For some reason, the Death Star is rattling as though it's going to blow up, but they haven't gotten to the blowing up part yet. People are still abandoning ship. 2 hours, 1 minute, 56 seconds. The remaining X-Wing and the Falcon fly straight for the main reactor chamber, followed closely by two fighters. The TIE fighters aren't firing. If the Rebels blow this part of the station up, everybody dies. Why are you not unloading everything you have on the guys that are trying to kill you? The Imperials are morons. 2 hours, 4 minutes, 56 seconds. Luke has escaped. He brings his father's body with him. He puts it on a pyre, and the black body is consumed by the flames. I feel like the Force, is it a midichlorian thing? The Force is really fickle. Yoda and Ben, apparently because they were good, died by disappearing. Ben Kenobi disappeared really quickly. He's like, ha, you think you're going to hit me with a lightsaber? I'm gone. And Yoda faded off in a very nicely done effect where the cloak surrounding him settles because he's not there anymore. The Emperor, being bad, blew up in a gale storm of released dark force energy. Vader just burns. Why? Because he got a little good at the end of a lot of bad? I'm also reminded, as the pyre is burning, of a quote from a different Star Wars movie. What an incredible smell you've discovered. Or, I thought they smelled bad on the outside. Okay, so PQRST, parody, quips, rants, and storytelling. I haven't ranted about anything much, but I'm about to. So, well, I guess I've ranted about the prequels, and I've ranted about the special edition. The thing about the special edition that most makes me furious, I don't care that George Lucas created the whole idea of Star Wars and that he wrote a script. And by the way, read his original script sometime if you want to see how it could have been. He had no right to do this. There is an actor on this planet. I think he's still alive. His name is Sebastian Shaw. If you IMDb Sebastian Shaw, you'll see, oh, he was in Return of the Jedi. Yes. He, when they removed Darth Vader's mask and you see this really old guy with very white skin and a scar and so forth, that's Sebastian Shaw. He's an actor. He had been in Return of the Jedi. At the end of Return of the Jedi, you see Yoda outside Luke walks away from the campfire, looking off into the forest, and you see the spectral form of Yoda and the spectral form of Ben Kenobi, and then there's a third person. Hey, it's Sebastian Shaw playing Anakin Skywalker, redeemed from the bad side of the Force. Except you don't see that anymore, because if you're watching the special edition, you see Yoda, you see Ben Kenobi played by Alec Guinness, and you see frickin' Hayden Christensen. So basically what George Lucas felt he had the right to do was take an actor and completely remove him from a movie and replace him with somebody else. And for my money, that is a crappy thing to do. I will rant about this during my Titanic review, when there are a couple of stunt people racing towards the camera down a corridor, pursued by a wall of water, risking their lives, and what the heck was his name? The director... Oh, it's not Leonardo DiCaprio. Who directed Titanic? Whatever the name of the schmuck is that directed Titanic, James Cameron replaced the stunt people's faces with Leonardo DiCaprio's and Kate Winslet's because he felt like he had the right to do that. And for my money, it's a crappy thing to do. So shame on you, George Lucas. What a slap in the face to Sebastian Shaw. I wonder if anybody told him. Or if the first time he saw the special edition of Return of the Jedi, he just got to see, oh, I'm not in this scene anymore. It also raises a nit. I think I'm done ranting. Ben Kenobi, the Alec Guinness ghost, is the same age as he was when he died. Yoda appears to be the same age, 900 years old. You reached the same age as when he died. Why does Anakin's ghost get to be suddenly 21 and all gorgeous? All right, moving away from the rant, 2 hours, 7 minutes, 48 seconds. I love the ending to Return of the Jedi. And another thing I don't like about the special edition is how they've replaced the happy Ewok song that I have on my original soundtrack CD with this sudden new version, because Lucas just has to do that kind of crap. But even though the happy Ewok song is gone and they've replaced it with something all special, I just love the look on Billy Dee Williams' face. Hey, he's back there in the group shot, clapping along, silently wishing he was anyplace else. I mean, just look at the shot. 2 hours, 7 minutes, 48 seconds. His expression has, "Where's my agent?" written, like, all over it. And my final thought, as the credits roll, as we all know, A New Hope, the original Star Wars movie, was episode 4, which, when that showed in theaters, really surprised and confused people. And Return of the Jedi is episode 6. We all now know what episodes 1, 2, and 3 were about. Lucas's original story had 9 episodes. And I can remember as a kid wishing we had access to 1, 2, and 3, careful what you wish for, and also 7, 8, 9. And of course now, The Force Awakens is 7. But I wonder if 7 and 8 and 9 are going to in any way reflect Lucas's original script. And what stories would he have told if he'd gotten around to it? Would they finally have explained the stupid midichlorian thing to even some sort of satisfaction? And that, I think, will pretty much do it for Return of the Jedi. It's no lightsaber vigil, but in a small way, hopefully I can keep a bit of a long time ago, far, far away flame burning for Miss Carrie Fisher. Next up, in a fortnight, the Will Smith vehicle I Am Legend, the only arguably horror film in the entire top 50 grossing films of all time as of 2010, and yeah, it'll be 2017 by then. I hope you have a happy new year and that you will own your stage, whether you force choke anybody today or not. See you next time.